This program is brought to you by Cabinet, a nonprofit arts organization based in Brooklyn, New York. Cabinet depends on your support to continue our activities. For more information, visit us online at cabinetmagazine.org.
The following recording is of On Friendship, Intimacy, Tact, and Turtles, the third installment of Cabinet's Bunk Bed Conversation series, featuring theorist and media artist Svetlana Boym and writer Leland de la Durante. It took place on May 16th, 2010.
Dinosaurs in Spanish. More dinosaurs. CD. Olga? Sleeping?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fighter planes. No idea. Olga? You sleeping?
I wish.
Did I wake you?
Okay. What's up?
Nothing. I thought you said something.
No?
No?
It could be.
No?
Okay. I was trying to keep silence.
Why? Because we get in trouble again?
Yeah.
Oh.
I worry about it.
Yeah.
You're not alone.
No, it wasn't pretty. No. No, then I'll be good. Then I thought you said something. That's why I did the little thing. I got it.
We
this
have,
is the dinosaurs.
Supposed
it's good.
To say something.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then say something.
Are we still friends?
Sure. Sure, that's all behind us, right?
Yeah, I hope so. Oh.
I mean, I don't really remember very much of it. And the stuff that I do, I don't really even remember that so well.
Do you say what you mean, Leland?
I suppose. But I just don't mean it for very long. But yeah.
Do you intimate or do you say what you mean?
No, I didn't really feel like intimating. No, I think I said what I meant.
It's not an eye exam.
No, it's cool. I'm armed. You remember that song you told me about?
Yeah,
the thing's about the thing with the mountain.
It's about strong, masculine friendship.
Yeah,
so you don't talk about it. You sort of sing about it.
Yeah, right. I think that's why it struck such a chord for me.
It's a sort of sublime, masculine friendship. Now look at that. It's right there. What a coincidence.
So he's like, I'm a strong, masculine, not saying anything kind of guy?
Парня в горы тяни, рискни, не бросай одного его. Пусть он в связке в одной с тобой, там поймешь, кто такой.
This is sort of an image of the future I never had. That's how I was supposed to lead my life. Coming up too quickly.
I'll go back down. Like these guys. They just go up for a day. I think they sleep up there.
Does anybody speak Russian?
Если парень в горах не ал, если сразу раскинь и вниз.
So if you go to the mountains and there is no ах coming out of your mouth, you like lukewarm.
Yeah.
Если парень в горах не ах.
Значит,
like there's no vow, you're just lukewarm. He's a friend, no foe. There's nothing worse than that.
That's, okay, so, okay.
So, the idea is,
so they're not talking, they're sort of in sync.
You just walk, you stand on the intoxicating top. And if you, translation from Russian,
right,
so of course better in Russian.
Awesome.
So the idea
that
is,
sounds very Russian.
Like if you're a true friend, you don't talk too much, but in the moment of hardship, you're like two souls and one body. But if you kind of lukewarm, you're not even worth a song. А таких не поют. Yeah, that's what he says. I don't sing about those lukewarm, wimpy kind of
Okay, they don't even get
friends.
Their song.
No.
No.
You just throw them out, don't even scold them.
Okay, they're not even worth your time.
This is the idea of how I was supposed to live my life. And this kind of who is not with us is against us. I was supposed to be strong, silent type, and look what happened.
Yeah, but I think you have to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So is he still just saying the same thing, or is he?
It's all about the intoxicating top.
Okay.
With a true friend, you stand in this intoxication of the top. See, that's why I was on a top bunk bed. And then you climbed in.
Right, but that's kind of perfect, know, right?
You want to know what happens on the top. It's lonely on the top, you know?
Because of your friends. Because you can't really, because you're not really talking to them.
Yeah, I don't know. It's because you just contemplate the topness of the top, you know?
Wait, we could do that. Yeah. I mean, we got
but
all night.
This song was like, you know, it was embodying this ideal of strong masculine friendship in which I no longer believe. That's the sad part of
no longer?
No.
So you were on board for a while, though. You were like, summit.
Yeah, go to the top.
Me and my silent friends and...
Yeah, and get the wimpy ones
wimpy
out
ones
of the
about
song.
Yeah. But you still kind of probably hold it like that you shouldn't. You're not, if you're like, we're such good friends, you're not friends.
Yeah.
Like, that's also what the song's saying,
well,
right? That you're, if you're kind of constantly saying, you know, we're such good friends.
No, this is about, like, you go to the top of the mountain like you go to the battle. With a friend, you go to the battle. It's not about bunk beds and all that.
Okay,
kind of
that's
stuff.
Just,
it's,
okay.
You know, it's a real thing.
Okay,
but
serious.
But it's kind of a friendship I no longer believe in. Because now I believe, you know, you don't need to go to the top to be a friend. I believe in a more horizontal relationship with more differences.
Sweet.
I'll
be back.
You know, it's like you
forgot
share
something.
Differences. Where are you going?
I forgot something.
About the horizontal relationship.
No, I got my dinosaur book. I'm listening.
Keep going.
You know.
So horizontal. Now we're like parallel.
Yeah, it's like, but it's a, you know, parallel lines meet, at least according to Russian geometry.
Wow, that would have been so much easier than ours.
Yeah, it's like, and as Nabokov said, if they don't meet, it's not because meet they cannot, but because they have better things to do. It's a free interpretation.
I was going to say, that's totally not ringing a bell.
Yeah. But I think, you know, feminine friendship, it's sort of more like those parallel lines who occasionally cross.
Uh-huh.
Where are you? Kind of
I'm right
feminine
here.
Friendship, you decided to go into the corner.
Yeah, no, I had...
To talk about that.
No, I got... That frightens me, actually.
It does? I'm happy to hear that.
Like your anchovy people?
My anchovy people, whom I'm not supposed to mention.
Oh, come on.
Hannah Arendt.
Share.
I was prohibited to... I used to, like, as a child, I used to sleep with the books. So I have this necrophilic relationship with some writers, like Hannah Arendt. So I know I'm not supposed to talk about her.
Okay.
But it's hard not to.
What books did you sleep with when you were a child that were necrophiliac?
They were even worse than Hannah Arendt, like Jack London.
He's, well, okay.
And he always went to Klondike. It was the same kind of, you know, masculine friendship,
yeah,
except
like
instead
dudes.
Of going to the top of the mountain, they go into, like, depths in search for gold. It's always like in search for a paradise, down there or up.
Yeah,
really, you
get...
prefer down there.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. So you would sleep with the books?
I would sleep with the books. So they were like, I probably slept with just as many books. Well, I wouldn't continue this talk.
There are only so many books.
But didn't you sleep with books?
Sure. I had some that were kind of plush for a while, that were pretty sleep-friendly.
Yeah, you remember the cover and the smell of the book. I still remember Three Musketeers and how they smelled. It's really
smell
wonderful.
Like? Russia?
Like glue? Not Russia at all. They precisely were not about Russia. It was the escape smell. Smell of escape.
Oh, wow. What's that smell like?
It was like, it was sort of glue of Russian printing press, but it wasn't literal. You know, they have all these femme fatales and all that. So you kind of, book becomes your companion.
When I was little, I guess I slept with Edgar Allan Poe, but it was because the only reason I my grandfather gave me this collection of books, and they were all by long-named authors, except for Poe. And in the dark, the only one I could see was Poe, because they all got the same amount of space, independent of number of letters in their name. So the only one in the dark that I could see was Poe. And I kept asking my mom if I was old enough to read a grown-up book, and she said no for many years. And then finally, when I was like 15, she was like, sure. And so I read Poe, which then I slept with just because it scared me so bad. It was better to have it close.
Now it gives me a deep insight into your psyche.
Really?
It's a very non-psychoanalytic situation. From as viewed
not
from
for
the
me.
Upper.
Feels pretty normal for me.
For me, it's sort of I'm supposed to have warm and fuzzy feeling being in a bunk bed, but I must say it's my first time in the bunk bed.
Is your it first you? Time?
Yes.
We should have talked this through. You've never been in a bunk bed?
No. Well, it reminds me of
how's it going?
Well, it's hard to say. It's a little wider than... I mean, I was on the collective farm where I would have to wake up at 7 a.m. and go to the fields gathering potatoes, which was like 2 hours.
And they didn't have you in bunk beds for that?
Yes, we were in bunk beds. Then we have to get up, gather potatoes, and then march. And I would always be on the board of shame because I never fulfilled my norm.
Oh, not enough potatoes?
So, no, they were frozen. It was kind of, it's not a pleasant memory. So I feel like if I don't fulfill my norm today, I'll have to wake up here at 7 o'clock and do something horrible in the garden, in the side alley, outside the space.
Oh, right. Yeah, they could put a board of shame up there, no problem.
I can just see the man back there is already.
Yeah, like that's probably like he's already got a virtual board of shame probably up there with you and your potato count, like for each like.
So yeah. I don't have the kind of we're supposed to feel home.
But so you have so you have an association. It's just horrible.
But it wasn't just horrible. It's like fact of life. It was just like twice as narrow than what we have now.
Yeah, these are pretty posh.
You don't have all this sort of bourgeois mattresses in red. They're like masquerading at being non-bourgeois, like in this revolutionary red of IKEA or something like that.
Yeah, this is definitely not revolutionary.
And what is that sort of pseudo-construct, pseudo-mirror meets constructivist blankets?
This is total crap.
Know.
I'm with you.
I mean, you know.
It's an outrage.
Cabinet I can't believe I got magazine. In this thing. I mean, what are they, you know, the design part is not... But, you know, they're trying to be red. It's like this...
Yeah, but actually they're blue, I think, under.
They're blue?
But it's not. That's no better.
Red and blue? Well...
None whatsoever.
What's happening on the screen? Nothing much.
That's... Oof, no idea.
Oh, my God. This is... We're all victims of YouTube. You know, like, you think you forget things from your childhood, and now you find them on YouTube, and everything is, like, infinitely available.
Actually, that isn't at all familiar to me.
You don't know Chuburashka? This is Lady with the Dog, but you miss Chuburashka. What should we call him? He's an imaginary animal.
The crocodile lady. Thing?
No, this is a lady with a dog. She doesn't matter for our story.
Okay.
It's like an extra. Okay, wait. Okay, wait, this is Chuburashka with big ears. He's like they're like misfit. It's Crocodile Gena. With the sort of, but look how friendly they are, and they share.
Yeah, that's really sweet. What creature is that? Is
the Chuburashka?
Yeah, the non-alligator or crocodile.
Please don't offend Crocodile Gena. It goes to my heart.
Oh, I didn't mean to.
Crocodile Gena. Chuburashka. You know, it's like kind of term of endearment. You just know that it's some kind of endearing creature. And
okay. She's
a misfit. And most importantly, they're traveling without a ticket. They ate their tickets.
Oh, because they were hungry?
No, they just wanted to have fun. They didn't obey by the disciplinary apparatus that you have to show a ticket to the policeman.
He's not buying that.
But, you know, it's interesting that in our childhood, the cartoons were very kind. The reality was, like, pretty violent.
That didn't seem kind. He's going to come and
No, but they got the accordion, you know, they'll sing about it. It's not a narrative.
Somebody just stole the accordion.
Oh, they did. I missed that. I looked at you. I missed that.
Somebody, some Russian person took the accordion.
It's the lady with the dog stole the accordion. But, you know, they're like two misfits. Look at his ears. He looks very non-Russian. He doesn't have that sort of Slavic soul. He has big dark eyes, big ears.
That's true. That's pretty Western.
Not a Western, he's a Russian misfit, you know, and the crocodile Gena is big but kind. They're not strong, silent types. But it's like, you know, it's interesting that all the animation films were about this misfit. So on the one end, you have these guys on the top of the mountain, on the other end, you have these cute misfits, and life goes on. So
that seems pretty great. I feel like it's something for everybody.
Yeah. Do you have American equivalent of Chiburashka?
We have... Probably not. Elephant ears, but those aren't really...
But, you know, the thing about him, like, there is, unlike Mickey Mouse and so on, there is no, like, Coca-Cola drink with Chiburashka. Chiburashka is pure. He did not commercialize himself.
Oh, okay.
He's, you know, he resisted the commercialization. He's preserved in this pure form.
So he's still going, like, but just not, none of the oligarchs, none of it. He's still...
Well, it's interesting that the children of the oligarchs are still watching Chiburashka. So there's this great contrast.
So they can be saved.
No, it's because it's escapist, you know, escapist animation. It has no relation to your everyday life. Or whatever, I don't know. I don't have a theory of Chiburashka. Chiburashka is beyond theory.
I totally agree.
Don't theorize my Chiburashka.
I didn't mean to. I was way out of line. Great.
Okay, what else is we going to see on the screen? Because we're clearly running out of kind of...
Yeah, we're in deep trouble.
We're really running out.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
But see what they give us. This is, for me, it's like a model of friendship because they're completely different. They hardly have anything in common. They're not even complementary. They're like of different orders. So it's like radically heterogeneous. Chiburashka and Crocodile.
And then the first, but then the first people are just kind of total... Fakes.
They're not
like
they're
soldiers.
They're too authentic.
That's youthful. That's very useful if you're gonna go kill aristocrats.
No. The first ones are not soldiers. This is like 60s culture of authenticity.
Right, but that stuff's only useful for climbing mountains, which has no use, and killing people, which is useful, but
it's not about use value. It's about high ideals. It's about the ideal of authenticity. The first song was the ultimate masculine authenticity.
So
you go to the top of the mountain, you either fall or you stand there in this intoxicated top.
But you can only get up there you can only get by with a little help from your friends.
Yes.
Just you shouldn't talk about it too much.
Yes. We have lots of animals coming up. I don't know what... But you know, it's interesting.
Do you know this thing? I didn't know this was going to be up here.
I have no idea what this is.
I think it's cocoa or something like that. And then there's this kitten. The kitten ultimately dies, and the gorilla then signs, you know, wants the kitten, asks for it again and again, and has its like greatest degree of sort of sign language articulateness in asking repeatedly where my friend the kitten is. Super sad.
About,
I don't think they should be showing this to us.
I think this is
frankly.
About interspecies relationships.
Yeah.
I know. So they are different, but they have...
Oh, like Chiburashka, yeah. Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
They aren't even complimentary, that's true. There isn't really a situation where they're like, you take this and I'll be, you know, cute.
I think, yeah.
I'll rip up a tree.
It's again interspecies. I think the sort of cabinet emphasis on interspecies friendship sort of comes through.
Yeah, I think it's maybe if you boil it down, that might be there.
But you know,
you know, their program, their ultimate.
They want us to go in some way, and we, you know.
Everybody wants something.
I mean, interhuman friendship is not boring. It's not so boring for me.
No, we haven't exhausted it. I mean, humans. We might have exhausted it, though.
But, you know, it's interesting reading this journal here called The Cabinet. I noticed that almost everybody wrote negatively about friendship. Except, this is something promising. The girls with scissors and bad, it's clearly promising.
She's on fire.
It's metaphoric.
They're both on fire.
They're both on fire.
That's not metaphorical.
You're whispering. Is it true friendship? You whisper. Listen, whisper.
That's not friendly. She's in for it now. She's gonna make her a dress.
Na procházku už nikdy nejdem, ano?
Právě. No more walking.
Na procházku už nejdem nikdy. Taky správně.
Uh-oh. I don't know if that's okay.
Moc.
See, this is feminine friendship. You're with scissors in bed, and all you're doing is a collage.
And you, when it's too much, you say it's too much. It's those guys in the mountains, some of them were probably like, this is too much.
But you know, you're like on the top of the mountains, too much, it's kind of the obvious sublime. Here, it's like endless play with a limit. You cut.
Yeah,
like
none of those guys were like, we're on fire, you're on fire.
Yeah, but you just cut close to the skin, but you never go there. That's friendship. It's like you're tracing this line with scissors very, very close to the skin.
I got you.
You know, it's a feminine thing. It's not like you get on top, you know.
And then, yeah, there's no fine tracing there. No.
Yeah, clap on like the shoulder. There is the silence. You know, masculine friendship is about, like what Nietzsche said, that it's supposed to be about silence. If you talk too much, there is no friendship. Feminine friendship, you talk endlessly, and then you move scissors around. You know, it's,
if that's feminine friendship, I'm super jealous.
Because
it looks awesomely fun.
Well, it's like Czech New Wave, then Soviet tanks came in, and it was the end of feminine friendship, I'm afraid.
Oh, Varashka, yeah.
For a period of time. But it's, you know, it's a kind of a different, it's a, about play. When you're on top of the mountain, you don't play. And there's aspect of friendship, which is a sort of unpredictable play, to some extent. Around the line where you can hurt. But not quite. Well, occasionally you stab your friend in front, but only occasionally. You
right.
Save that for the special occasions. Don't do it.
They were stabbing in front.
Well,
I mean, they were really, they're playing in front. They're playing with stabbing in front.
Yeah.
Though you could tell with the Russian dudes at the beginning, if they were gonna stab one another in the back, it'd definitely be in the front.
With the guys in the mountains?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you've...
They can push you from the back down the mountain, but if they stab you, they'll go...
But that'll also be face first. It'll be like, there'll be no words because that wouldn't work, but this is, you know, so I'm doing this, know that I'm doing this. You deserve this. You're getting it.
Yeah, but like in the first song, there is no humor because it's about authenticity. Oh, I got some speck in my eye, sorry.
Uh-oh.
From watching all this stuff.
Moving. No idea here. I think that guy in the middle's dead, though.
I think they'll try to get us back to antiquity, but I have no idea what it is. I mean, you know, it was supposed to be two cells and one body, or what was it, two body and one cell? What was the quote from Aristotle? Which one is better? Two cells and one body, or two bodies and
That'd
one
cell? That'd be crowded. No, the other one. Where you had to share.
Which one? Two bodies?
One soul, two bodies.
Mm-hmm. You prefer that?
I think so. If you had two souls in your body?
I prefer that, actually. I prefer two souls in my body, because that's again... That's...
I'd rather have no soul in my body. That's not that big a body.
I know, but... You know.
You'd rather have two?
Are you sure you have one?
No.
I'd rather
There's
have
no
two.
Test.
There's not a, well, I'd rather have two because then you can have even more parallel
lives.
Oh,
like a spare? Okay, no.
Well, that's one idea, that it's spare, so if you lose one or sell one on the market, you know, then you still have another one. But I have not been thinking about this commercial transactions. It's more like you then have parallel lives and the parallels can cross sometimes. You know?
Right.
This is all this classical... What is this, anyways? Can you...
No idea. There's... One dude's
is
dead.
Somebody is dead.
And one guy's
is
upset.
It a guy?
And he's like, just don't...
Is it Antigone or something? No?
Antigone, no, there's no girls.
Well, there is...
Antigone's a girl.
No, but no one.
Oh, that could be Antigone, but both the brothers are dead. So
I think it's the allegory whose meaning is lost.
Yeah, definitely.
I think definitely lost.
Yeah.
Do you think if we put some light on it?
I guess we're on our own.
This is the point. We lose the visuals, and what do we have left?
One
just
another.
Intimacy. Yeah. Just the intimacy.
Yeah.
You are into intimacy.
Oh, yeah.
What do you like about it?
Guilty as charged.
What do you like about it?
What's not to like?
It's kind of claustrophobic.
Two bodies, one soul.
Yeah, it's kind of claustrophobic.
Intimacy?
Yeah.
But you can then go out for a while. Come back.
Yeah, I guess.
Unless you're in a situation where you just can't go out for a while anymore.
Yeah.
There's no more out. That wouldn't be very good. But that wouldn't be really chosen.
It's
you'd just
no
be like,
exit.
You'd be locked down in some relationship. Mm-hmm. But that wouldn't really be intimacy because you didn't pick it. That would just be constraint. Mm. Like, you'd have to be kind of into it and along for the ride. Mm-hmm. Like a little, like you were kind of complicit in.
Into the intimacy.
Yeah, but there was almost like that you don't have to actually commit a crime, I think, to be intimate with people. Though obviously the two go together often. But that you kind of like feel that you're complicit in something, like that it's not necessarily very bad, but you have a deep affinity, the deep kind of affinity of people who are constrained to it because they're committing a crime together, they're doing something wrong together, but.
But like complicity makes intimacy interesting. You know, but I like,
I'm with you on that.
You know that we're not supposed to do etymologies, but what can you do? And intimate has to do, like, to intimate means to hint, but it also originally meant to make announcement. So there is kind of a tension between publicizing and going in depth on intimacy. So there is, you know, intimacy is not as straight as it seems. Which is good, but complicity makes it interesting because then you own to something. It's like a little secret society that you establish. I mean, do you think of friendship as a kind of secret society?
Sure.
Of two?
No, more. I mean, of two, but it could grow like any good secret society. Just two people in a secret society? Not going to get much done.
For the minimal communist cell, you always needed three. The same for the bottle of vodka. You know, it's always the three. Two is...
And that's no coincidence.
That's probably no coincidence. But kind of a magic. Okay, look, what a surprise. Something came up on this. Something very, very long came up.
Yeah, I'm not reading that.
No.
Free neck. Frug means love. Apparently.
No, but friendship is connected to freedom and joy.
Friday.
You only see the animals on
friendship
the Friday.
Friday's friendship day. Yeah. And free neck day.
There are lots of the
free alls.
But the thing about friendship, like there is no institution of friendship. For intimacy, there is an institution. Right, like marriage or secret society. For friendship, there is nothing.
Blood so brothers kind of, for boys, like your mountain dudes, for sure. Blood
but that's
brothers.
Brotherhood. Brotherhood is not the same as friendship. You know.
It's true. It is totally
friendship
without ritual.
Friendship is not a blood relationship. It's kind of like elective affinity. So it's, you know, it doesn't.
Though guys frequently get super drunk.
But that's a bromance. That's called bromance.
Yeah. Good point.
I
but
just
you can have like a bunch of people.
I just learned
like
this word bromance. I want to use
you
it.
You use it really well.
I have an option. So.
No, that was a good one. but it's true that, yeah, there aren't really, you can't, I now declare you friend and friend, except for like friends auto declare friendship, either silently on a Russian mountain or actually verbally in a bar.
Well, there used to be pacts of friendship. Friendship would be sealed with blood.
That's what I was saying.
There are famous kind of oaths that, you know, do a little bit of blood sucking or...
Sucking? No, I mean, I just knew the cutting and then... Yeah, I mean, I've done that. Have you ever done that? You got your girls don't do that.
I've done something like that when I was sleeping with Three Musketeers and identified with...
Oh, you did it with yourself?
No, with a woman friend.
Okay.
In the woman's bathroom. We were in like sixth grade,
probably. Awesome.
This story brings tears to my eyes, but I wouldn't go into it.
Okay, I respect that.
This is, we have like a bromance going.
Yeah.
With parallel lines.
Yeah, you can, yeah. That's steamy. But we couldn't. There couldn't be any ritual because of like your Russian friends. You can't really. You don't go around saying. Anyone who talks about being friends with someone else is sort of antithetical to friendship. It doesn't. That means that it's imperiled or artificial. If you're actually verbalizing it, mostly you're just acting it out.
But
you're being it.
But that's again kind of a male thing, a pact of silence. Again, I'm not supposed to say I sleep with Hannah Arendt, but since I do. She talks about that it kind of exists through language, so you talk, and through the discourse you kind of make the word appear and kind of invoke the world. So the more you talk about friendship, you kind of co-create together, or you talk with a friend, not about friendship. So language is actually incredibly important. It creates its own space. So it's not just intimacy as physical proximity, but that kind of the other space that you create through talking. Even we do that, although we're pretending not to.
We're pretending not to?
Yeah, we're pretending like...
Oh, like this is normal. Okay, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Okay, do you understand, notice how we depend on the visual because we're afraid to run out of things to say to each other. We're afraid to say
too
much.
Or afraid of silence. Or afraid of saying too much.
We're afraid of saying too much.
I'm not afraid of saying too much.
No?
No.
Well, go for it.
But I'm also not afraid of silence.
Mm. Well, that's what we should do. We should just keep half an hour silence.
Sure. Do we have that kind of time?
Well, see, this is the contemporary world. We don't have enough time.
We can make the time to be silent.
Yeah, we should just be silent. And that would be truly radical. But we should just sleep, you know? Just keep silence and let people share our silence. They're scared of it.
Those people?
These people are really scared that they'll be put on the spot with the silence.
The silence. Let's stick the silence out of it. I don't know, I'm going to think it over. I'm going to go down here a little
bit. Don't.
It's okay, I got you.
Be intimate, but in fact we are wired. We are wire-taped.
That's a kind of intimacy. Yeah.
Wait, I think the red button is not. This is like camp, okay.
It's just like camp. Oh, right, we totally didn't finish that. So you were on your shame thing.
Yes, on the board of shame.
And that is your soul, your unique bunk bed experience.
Well, I think I remember this collective forms, and it was very unromantic. That's why I have problems with collective labor and fulfilling norms, because I actually done it. I had to inject myself in fake illness to escape that bunk bed, after which I became a heroine of the collective form.
Where did you get fake illness?
Well, do you want to know?
Totally.
Okay, I will tell you. I had a friend who was in medical school. I will whisper. I had a friend who was in medical school. I called her, and she told me if you put salt in your armpit in the collective farm, one, because they put a thermometer into only one armpit, and they're really stupid in the collective farm. So if you put salt into your armpit, put a thermometer, the temperature really goes up, and then you say your ear hurts, that is a sign of some terrible disease that in the collective farm they immediately send you home. I did have, so it worked. It worked. Then I was sick for a week.
Sick? Like not, but like it, really it doesn't sick. Actually make you sick, right? It just because it's just salt.
Yes, but I think I swallowed iodine or something else. I forgot the whole recipe. They were like 10 steps. It was a 10-step
okay.
progress.
Okay.
10-step. So, you know, so since then, I kind of don't have romantic notion of collective labor, I'm afraid.
Because
you probably do. I can see it from you.
And you get and you can and you can scam it.
No, because it served no purpose. You know, one track that could do the job that all those people on the board of shame were trying to do for a month. So it was kind of sadly pointless.
Yeah.
But then I had positive experience. I remember taking trains like Chuburashka and Crocodile Gena.
Yeah.
And then you like look into the window from your bunk bed and
absolutely.
The world passes you by. It's bad.
No, that's true. That's super lovely.
What about you? You had
intense.
Some. I think you are into the insecticide.
Oh yeah, Deep Woods Off.
Yes, tell us. Tell me about it.
It's,
how does it make you feel? I'm sorry, I don't have
excited.
It.
Excited.
Okay.
It's the most erotic scent. Not only
I
I've ever smelled,
to see you,
but
your
could ever imagine. Because they would cover us in it, or we would cover ourselves in it at camp in Michigan where I grew up, and that's the first place that I ever really kissed a girl. Sarah Kelly and I, when I was little, we truth or dared one another to soap opera kiss, but it wasn't the same.
What and I soap opera kiss?
Yeah, it's actually, that's not even a cultural thing. It's just she made it up. She'd seen on soap operas that they turn their heads to the side when they kiss, and we were six, and so, and had...
Six?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And we had snub noses, and so we could actually kiss, like, front on, no problem, for a long time if we needed to. But she thought that we should turn our heads to the side and kiss, so she double dared me to soap opera kiss her, which was excellent, but different than camp. And
were you on the board of shame after that?
No, not inside. No, I was on the board of joy. No, but actually, I think I was a little bit ashamed of it because. We decided in the little... I was in a gang in elementary school.
In the gang? You?
Yeah.
I would never think that of you.
Yeah, not a lot of
really?
People would. And we decided that we didn't like girls for a while.
Uh-huh, that's
so
interesting.
So I had to keep the Sarah Kelly thing on a lowdown for a little while.
Because uh-huh.
we lived near one another. And so I would act like I was walking home with her because I had to, because we lived so close or whatever. Like, I didn't really want to, but I totally wanted to. I'm ashamed of that, by the way.
This is interesting. It's between bromance and romance.
Right.
Good
and I was trying
bromance.
To have the both best, like the best
you
of both worlds.
You wanted to have best two, yeah, best of both worlds. Never works. So
I told Matthew Cunningham and David Martin, but I didn't tell the leader of our gang, Steve Hackney. Steve Hackney, if you're out there on the internet, you can suck it. Steve Hackney was a total tyrant. Anyway, Deep Woods Off. And bunk beds are intimately related in my mind because, and kissing girls. So if this was out of wood and I was covered in Deep Woods Off, or you were, this would
Sorry?
Be totally different. If
yes.
these were wood bunks, like at my camp, and if you and or I were wearing Deep Woods Off,
and we
this
but
would be
use a little
totally
bit of
different.
Your imagination, Leland. I mean, you don't need to be so literal.
I can't call to mind the smell of Deep Woods Off, but if I smell it, and this is really no joke, like at some picnic or whatever, it really sort of stirs. Mm.
Well, next time we're on
embers.
The bunk bed, we'll make sure to get some insects and insecticide.
The insects insects aren't necessary.
No, no, but we need a plausible scenario. We'll put a lot of insects
oh, yeah,
first.
Oh, right.
You know, like very
so many insects around here.
Yes, we need like verisimilitude effect. We'll you know, have fake trees, insects, and then the insecticide, and then. But you already told us your true confession. You were so easy. A man of no secrets.
I got others. I mean, that's not that bad.
I still went home and played Truth or Dare with Sarah Kelly. I just didn't tell one member of my gang about it. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot worse that year.
So are we still talking about friendship?
I mean, I don't know. We're talking about Deepwood Zoff right now. Or that's what I want to talk about.
But there's always this kind of, you know, particular thing. What's going on there? Something. There's absolutely nothing. No, there is something.
It's a something.
It's too mysterious. Hands across.
It's Cape Cod or something.
It's a lighthouse.
I think that
it's like a.
It's again an allegory whose meaning is lost.
I think that's like a. Yeah, I don't think we need to pay attention to that. You have such little feet. They're cute.
Oh.
Yeah. Imagine they'd be bigger. They're totally.
But you know,
clean
it's
too.
Always sorry.
No.
But there's always like one particular thing, like this insecticide that kind of draws you. And this is like a secret space of friendship. You need those kind of things that nobody else understands. They become like triggers of memory, so it's a secret territory. I like that.
Oh, yeah. There's really nothing more heartrendingly erotic, but also tender for me than to say Deepwood Zoff.
Okay, but I think you're getting a little bit.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're right.
Into the right. Uncharted territory.
Right.
You got a little carried away, my friend.
Right, I did. Okay. And that's not really so much friendship. That's more bunk bed.
It's the But what's the feminine equivalent of bromance? Strom? No, it's not gonna be stromance.
I don't know. I don't know if you guys need one. Because you said that women can just sort of talk about it.
Allegorical, you know, it's a sort of allegorical relationship with two flags.
Yeah. I have like one of those little French revolutionary hats on, just kind of tricked out American, which is sweet.
But you said that women didn't really need to.
That is that men needed bromances because they can't, like your mountain guys, they just can't really talk it through, and so in those bromance movies, they after great pains and almost and they imperil their relationship, and then eventually they're able to tell one another either directly or pretty unambiguously
that they're like that old usually when it happens.
When the time of true confession.
Yeah, and then they say that they like one another, and it's super hard for them, but it needn't be. But you were saying that women don't need to, because you guys are talking about it all the time, like Chuburashka and his friend.
Chuburashka is beyond.
I know I can't say his name right.
What are you talking about? Let's keep going. What do you mean? Go. You sure? Yeah. Hit it.
Of the genre.
Not only why did they need to go on a car chase, why do they need to commit suicide?
Well, we don't know that. It could be like...
You think they're going to make it to some other side there?
I like the suspension of disbelief.
Okay.
I don't know.
That's true. Anything can happen. Like, absolutely.
Maybe they leap into
like a choir of heavenly angels could like sort of swoop up and...
No, they leap into another movie where everything is possible. Get scissors.
They land and crash, but they don't die, and those Russian dudes show up.
and mend them. It's totally silent because they don't have...
And this is the Russian-American friendship. That's what the film is really about. But we just don't know what happens after the leap.
Yeah. I guess we don't know.
Interesting. Because, I mean, this is sort of like, you know, nice sensual close-ups, winds in their hair, they're touching, kisses modeled because they did something on the TV projector. And then why do we need such conventional landing? The cops and the... And then the car is suspended in the air.
You mean like they could just be at like a corner in somewhere and they could like say, you know, why don't we just do what we want? And then they kiss and then they like turn on red or something.
Yeah, for example.
And sure. That'd be better. I'm with you.
Well, it should just
But it's kind of not as cool an image.
No, but look, they should just end on this particular close-up. Imagine the whole
with
movie.
Gina Davis, like, freaked out?
It's not freaked out. It's a gesture that defies description. Her mouth half open. You know, it's a non-codified gesture. It would be beautiful.
And then she comes in
for help. Right, he's like, she left me for that woman. No, I'm just hanging out with guys.
Where's my water? Is it
so cool? No, I wouldn't do that.
It's interesting. Russian druk rhymes with druk, which means suddenly. But they both share otherness because druk is the other. So it's not the intimate soul, not a mirror image of you, but the other.
Do they come from the same thing? Like, because like a suddenly would be something that would be like suddenly, other than what's going on.
Suddenly the
it's
other
like,
walks in. I'm not sure, but I'm tempted to say yes.
Okay.
But you know, they adopted this word drug, Anthony Bourges, with D-R-U-U-G for the fake Soviet language, and it means a gangster.
Oh, yeah. So right, in Clockwork Orange, right, yeah.
So they moved from that kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Friend, the Russian friend has to be a gangster. It's a kind of cultural misinterpretation.
That's not the case. They're pretty coordinated in their little steps.
But you have to understand, this is not like official culture. It's a kind of the model of alternative authenticity. They're not marching to build a scientific communism. They're not going to the collective farm. They're conquering tops for their own sake.
Oh, because they're not doing sort of utilitarian work for the betterment of the...
Like bettering of... nothing by climbing this. It's sort of risk for its own sake.
Oh. Wait, that's a woman.
Yeah, there's one woman.
I missed that. What's her role? Can she talk about the stuff? Maybe that's she's like an interpreter. She's like, he's feeling frustration about what, because you're better friends with the other dude
but
now.
But you know, in Russia, they didn't believe in psychology either. This is from the 60s, so you talk to a friend and you never talk to a psychiatrist. Because friend is not, the psychiatrist is not druk, most likely. You know, like friend and fiend are sort of related in English. Tell me if I'm wrong. So in Russian, the psychiatrist is the opposite of druk. So in a way, it's a kind of a non-psychological culture because friends don't spell things out. They kind of understand each other with half words.
Right.
And the idea is that you don't operate according to like conventional psychology. You know, tell me about your childhood. Who cares? You kind of go through tests with a friend.
Okay.
So it's a different, not psychology, it's a different way of being. So they're like beyond psychology. So the woman is
definitely,
not,
yeah.
The woman is not like a little psychiatrist taking notes.
Okay, she's like
maybe she's
something
kind
else.
Of an informer. Who knows? She's
okay.
Sort of blonde, kind of Germanic looking.
Okay, and they're just not noticing. Well, whatever. Oh, but so you're saying like the fiend thing like would be like a frenemy.
Like, frenemy, it's another one.
It's like bromance. It's real new and real dumb. but like, I don't have no idea etymologically, but sure, like a friend, a fiend is really not a friend.
But they're and, related. It's like this interesting opposite.
But they're also like mid-level. They're not like on our level. Like a fiend isn't even. They're not even human. They're on like an intermediate level.
The interspecies.
Sort of. Okay. They're like an angel, or a devil, or a daimon, or something like that, or like a gnome.
So we've got
or like a hobbit.
We've got a Russian and an American here.
He's talking.
He's wearing me bad. That is awesome.
I'm coming to your bedroom to ask a question.
Getting under the covers.
This is like
just act like nothing is happening.
I'm desperate to know since you guys are reaching across that body of water between your continents. Friendship in the collective, friendship in democracy. Is this what binds either of those aggregations? Is friendship the affect citizens have should have the disposition we should have to one another? In this country, in America, is it the stuff that holds people together on the collective farm, or is it equally alien to both? Where does it fit?
It's a serious question.
I understand him, and yet I'm frightened.
I think we do the answer. I think we have to.
Better not.
I think we can try. Well,
you can answer.
I answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what we think.
You forgive me.
For answer?
I answer on behalf of both of us. Okay, can I answer on behalf of Boston?
Sure.
Okay, he can then answer also on behalf of Boston. Okay, so basically it's neither, because collective farm is not about friendship. It's about like
potatoes.
Official collectivity. So you actually develop friendship against this official collective. Like I had a very close friend, we worked on potatoes together, and we would like play names of poets back and forth just to have think of something outside potatoes. This is like week two or week three. So friendship is what you develop in reaction to this official collectivities. So in a way, you'd think that in democracy, you'd have more friendships, but the opposite is true, because friendship is like alternative solidarities, which you really need. I don't know. That's I kind of lost. Do you want to continue on behalf of
both of us?
I thought
that was super good.
Thank you so much. But it's a hard one. You know.
No, I mean, I guess you're supposed to do an impossible thing, which is that have everybody. No, that's sure, that's totally impossible. But to have everyone be to be well disposed to everyone else in your particular democracy on an almost impossible level. That we're all in this together. We are all, that we have some degree, there's some discernment involved, that there's some adhering to a common code and a common something or other, maybe a common origin, a common place, a common time. But it's totally empty and vacant and very prescriptive, and indeed feels a lot like a like some sort of place where you'll go on the board of shame if you don't follow these abstract rules. And yet it really seems to have the best intentions of the world. Why shouldn't we be friendly to one another? Absolutely no reason not. Why shouldn't we seek to limit injustice and kindness in ways that we can only do by working together? And yet we're just so nasty that we don't.
Who are we?
Humans. I mean we're so taken care of, like us and our four friends on the mountain or three friends on the mountain, that we don't really do. We don't treat strangers like friends. We don't live in a culture as though everyone in it were our friend, equally having an equal claim on our time and our energy and our resources.
Yes, but I actually am not entirely sure about that, if you allow me to.
Oh, totally.
Because I think like the first impression of Russians coming to America is that everybody is friendlier than Russians and nobody is a real friend. This is a complete stereotype. First, you're like extremely happy that people tell you, have a good one. And like all Russians, the first expression they learn, have a good one. What good one? Good life, good. It's very deep, you know, have a good one. And like everybody goes around, repeat, have a good one. And you have a good one.
You too.
You know, but it's so wonderful. You know, when my parents came, they were like talking to every policeman, have a nice weekend. You know, the sort of superficial friendliness is amazing, and I think one should not underestimate it. But then it's almost like it creates a sort of vague social bond. But if you want to go deeper, it's very hard. It's almost impossible. So I come from a culture where everybody is extremely rude on the street. So now I'm like neither here nor there. I want true friend. I want to have both true friends and friendliness. And that's an impossibility. But there's something about friendship. It's not entirely democratic. It's a little bit exclusive. Friendships are like alternative solidarities or elective affinities. They're not by blood, but you cannot be totally democratic. So that's the kind of problem between friendship in a way and democracy, that friends are actually few. So I checked the dictionary, by the way, preparing for this talk nervously. I checked that the verb to friend dates back to 2005. Why it was so interesting, that like there is a verb to love, but not to friend.
I'm telling you, it doesn't happen in the real world.
What? To friend? Do you friend people?
But I'm not on Friendster, but that would be where I would friend.
No, but you friend on Facebook.
Oh, sorry, or Facebook or whatever, but you friend people in these virtual spaces. You don't like, I don't friend people here. I might make friends with them. I might be friends with them, but I don't friend them.
But it is interesting because I feel like in this have a good one, it's a sort of superficial friending goes on all the time.
Oh, and right, yeah.
Totally. Have a good one, have a bad one. Imagine telling to somebody,
have one.
But that really have a good go. One is kind of like have one to go. I mean, imagine saying have a like a bad one.
Yeah. Just so it covers everything. I don't know what you're going to do when you leave my site. I hope it's horrible.
But it is interesting between friending and actually being friends. I wonder if friendship is becoming obsolete since we want to mourn something. Maybe we should...
Do?
I don't know, but it's like, you know, it could be an allergy of... Maybe we don't want to mourn anything.
My first memory of friends are my parents and dogs. And one of my friends when I was young, he had a dog called, the dog's name was The Good One.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm totally serious. Mike King, Okemos,
so
Michigan.
Developing a telepathic
The Good One. Everyone in the family called it The Good One.
Really?
The
it's
Good
a,
One.
It's a friend.
Come here, The Good One. That it was amazing, the regularity. Nobody, well, no, it was its name was The Good One. But no one ever omitted any part of it. They would slur it together sometimes, but no one would ever say one or the or good.
That's interesting.
It was always The Good One.
That's interesting.
It was a really good dog, but it was The Good One. Yeah.
But you know, I don't know. What the, here is a dog for you.
That's a dog?
Go back to the child.
I think that's not a monkey. It's not, it's like
you
a really
like,
sick dog.
Svetlana, can I ask you a question?
Oh my God, yes, please.
Oh, it's holding its own hand.
Somebody is asking me a question. Shh.
Because Leland didn't seem too interested in your horizontal friendship.
Leland, you know.
I have issues.
Guy, he's like, he has issues.
And to me, it seemed to promise. And now he's trying to drown me out with all his noise.
I'm not.
Okay, wait, I'm not quiet. Yes. No, go ahead.
Okay. Because I don't know what you meant by horizontal friendship, but it seemed to promise some kind of free love of friendship, which now, with your elective affinities, I'm not so sure about.
Uh-huh.
What's the horizontal friendship thing?
I don't know, because the film from which the singing guy comes from, Vysotsky, it's called The Vertical. And I was thinking, you know, vertical and horizontal, and again, this is maybe Nietzsche, sorry, I slept with him too, but Nietzsche has the idea that love is a vertical relationship, and therefore it's inferior to friendship. He doesn't say that friendship is horizontal, but there's something about friendship that it's like equal and different, which is a very interesting relationship. We're not supposed to have it. It's supposed to be either about sameness or radical difference or power struggle or master-slave dialectic. We sort of don't have names for this kind of gray zones of relationships and overlaps. And I'm like really, really interested in it. So I think the fact that it's exclusive, it's just, let's be honest. You can't be friends. Because, you know, if you're real friends, you have your secret country together. You cannot inhabit, you know, 400 secret countries. Like my niece has 456 friends on the Facebook. You cannot have 456 secret countries. But with this friends, you kind of open up, you know, other maps or other territories. But it is, I think I'm interested in this equality and difference and never complete overlap. And not two souls in one body, not one body in two cells. It's kind of like concentric overlaps. I don't have names for it.
I'm really happy I don't have to sleep with my friends.
You are happy that you don't have to sleep? It makes sense, because friendship, you know, is also about distance, Leland. You know, I mean, the other thing that was...
No, it's good for me to hear. You're fine.
But, you know, like, there's this whole... You know, there's a whole kind of idea of tact and sort of interesting relation to distance, because intimacy, as I said, can be claustrophobic. And there's something about friendship that it's, you know, like in Russian, drugoy, it's close and other. I mean, I talked about diasporic intimacy or some kind of... You also preserve this strange distance, like the girls playing with scissors. They play close to skin, but without really touching. And that's something, you know, we don't appreciate. We don't have time for this kind of tactful dance on the limit, which could be very interesting, but we're rushing, so we're cutting and, you know... We're either too far away or too close. Maybe we don't do something about this strange relationship kind of on the line. Just tactful without touching too much, without being too much. Hey, Leland, do you have something to say?
Does anyone else have a question?
What are you? Are you a party leader?
Because I have like 20.
Okay, you act like I'll just keep holding on to them. Are you a party leader? You're in a hat. Are you like a head of the Young Communist League?
I came here alone. Maybe someone who came with a friend wants to talk about that.
No. People are really taking over. They're breaking our...
It just feels natural to have a discussion about it. But this is not so much a question, but what you just said, sir, about... feeling thankful that you don't want to sleep with your friends or something. The idea of... that you don't have to. I'm just thinking about the idea of love and the idea of friendship and how they're kind of like a Venn diagram. They feel... I mean, the idea is that you love your friends, but if you don't want to sleep with them, there's a part of you that's disgusted by some of your friends or something. And I'm trying to reconcile that in my own mind about how, you know, with lovers... you literally love every part of them and you want them around you in every way. And with friendships, there's these barriers. There's this distance that you mentioned that it's sort of off limits.
But distance is not equivalent of disgust.
Sure, but like the idea of like, I don't know, like I'm thinking about homophobia or the literal designations that we make for relationships in our culture. It's not everything is fluid, not everything is free, though it could be. And there's always that suggestion that, you know, maybe you could, you know, you share a bed with some friends, you can become intimate with other friends. And yet, in bromances, for instance, in a Hollywood sense, there are very clear delineations, like you will not see each other naked, per se, or something like that. And I'm just wondering what everyone else thinks about these ideas of... love and friendship and how they don't completely overlap.
But it presupposes that, you know, love, you love every bit of your lover. It's a certain form of possession. You are possessed and you possess your lover. And that's only one form of human relationship. I mean, friendship can be, I don't think distance does have to be based on disgust. It's also could be based on plurality, tenderness, play, tact. There's so many variations. It's a non-possessive relationship. It's not about total fusion. It's kind of a different kind of human relationship where you kind of see the otherness of the other and you're not so jealous. You're tender without extreme jealousy. In a way, I think maybe I'm wrong, that in American culture, you kind of prefer love. Like love is privileged over friendship somehow, And if I can mention Hannah Arendt for the very last time?
Yeah, sure.
You can start blinking at me if I do.
No, I'm
hey,
good.
Hey, where are you
come
going?
Back, come back.
Okay, come back, come back. So, you know, Hannah Arendt said that romantic love for a single one is like totalitarianism for two, because they let the world in between disappear. So you could argue that in friendship, you don't let the world disappear. You're kind of remaking worlds. These are my notes for this comment. But, you know, so I don't know. I don't think that, like, erotic relationship is great and loving every bit of the other is wonderful, but it's only one kind of relationship, and it would be rather claustrophobic if the options are either total love or total distance.
Well, I'm not suggesting that, but I'm saying it should be more fluid, like, as opposed to running into walls in certain relationships. You know, like, most relationships in our culture just find a natural plateau. You know, like the friend zone or something like that.
Maybe one shouldn't idealize. If you idealize, your expectations are too high. You have to go with the flow. And I mean, the problem with American culture, you know, expectations are so high that it's only you can only go downhill, getting back to our mountaineering metaphor. You know, if you don't start on the top, maybe you can explore. I don't know, more.
But even sort of independent of whatever cultural difference, I thought you were going to say the opposite. That is that what I hear people say far more often is that the power of physical passion, power of physical desire is such that you can have very partial relationships with people where you're intensely physically attracted to them, but you use the word disgust or this distaste, where you don't like a bunch of things that they think or say. Or maybe even in some sense are, but you have this very intense physical relationship, and so they are your lover, and that is your relationship. Whereas friends, it's more holistic, it's more total. And when, if there is a problem, you disagree about something absolutely fundamental, about the way to treat other people, the way to see yourself, the way to be in the world, then that's a real issue that has to be talked through. And the way that with a lover you might say, well, you know, ultimately, it doesn't need to be total. We don't need to be on the same page. We don't need to sum it together. And so I'm kind of surprised that your idea is that. Indeed, there is something about close friendship, the most intimate of friendships, where it seems to be, like any overwhelming human relationship, that it seems to want to go somewhere. You want it to continue. And when it seems to reach an internal or external limit, that's indeed very sad. But I don't see actually that having, maybe I'm forgetting or missing something, but I don't see that having anything specifically to do with romantic relationships versus non-romantic relationships. I could imagine, I could imagine there being something, and say if you're heterosexual and your male friends, you're so close that you somehow think, well, how do we take this to another level? We're not sexually attracted to one another, but what if we were? Wouldn't that be kind of awesome? Because there'd be this whole new level or whatever. I could see that there'd be some sense that can't this go somewhere else? But this place it seems to go is just sort of your life, the way that it continues, the way that you continue to rely and people and be reliable to them. So anyways, that's a long expression of surprise.
But I liked that.
But I wonder about friendship and intimacy. Friendship and love and erotic love. Whether there is a continuity or radical difference. And I change my mind every day about it. Because perhaps,
depending on who you wake up with?
Well, or whom I talk to, let's put it that way. You know, because sometimes one turns into another, sometimes it can't, sometimes it had already turned. But there is a kind of richness to human relationships. Friendships can exist in plural. For some reason, we think about like erotic attachment as more singular. So I think I'm attracted to this plurality, and something helpful finally came up.
Right,
on the
and finally, scene. Yeah. This thing has
actually,
been
I
no help.
I almost throw it out. I have this poem in Russian, so I kind of have to. Есть
No, go.
Okay, I go in Russian for one. Есть близость. It's always better in Russian, just totally
I'll
unfair.
I'll just translate it for you guys.
Yes, it's totally unfair comment, because it's like, you know, claiming the privileged knowledge of some mysterious language. Okay. Есть близость людей, заветная черта, ее не перейти влюбленности и страсти, пусть в жуткой тишине сливаются уста, и сердце рвется от любви на части. That's the end, coming to an end. Стремящиеся к ней безумные, и ее достигшие, поражены тоскою. Теперь ты понял, отчего мое не бьется сердце под твоей рукой.
So that's super sad, right?
still beating, barely.
Over here?
I would say. I have right and left problem. It's coming from where I come
this
from.
One's
I
much
have,
better.
It's because you sit in that way. It's a mirror image. Okay, but it's kind of a nice poem, and it's an Akhmatova. I think I like that, that it's in human intimacy. There is an inviolable line that cannot be crossed, neither by romance or fashion. And, you know, the end, it's about this heart that is silent. Okay, my heart is silent under your hand. But it's the whole idea that there is this inviolable line between people, and the question is, what do we do about it? Do we try to violate it and transgress it at any cost? Do we accept it as distance? Do we dance on this line? Perhaps I would prefer to dance on this line, but I wouldn't want to violate it for the sake of some kind of high authenticity. So maybe it's a cultural difference. Maybe it's like wisdom of... You know,
I mean, this is this is incredibly sad. I assume that you know why my heart is silent under your hand. People's hearts only go silent under other people's hands when they're dead. So that she's
you are a literalist again. It's just
I don't.
Not...
It's my home. I don't. So okay. So presuming that, so one thing could be I've killed myself. That is now you know why my heart is silent under your hand. I.e., now you know why my heart no longer beats because in this world. Human intimacy is limited, and I wanted it to be limitless because I couldn't cross or violate this inviolable line. So that's just, I'm just sort of playing out one reading. That doesn't seem to be the only one, but one idea that is, because everything is about the fact that there's an inviolable line is sad.
No, it's very good. It's true, satisfying.
In life,
spoken.
I think so, but in the poem.
No.
Because friendship is powerless here. Even these sublime and fiery moments of happiness with a free and alien soul, even those don't do it. If you keep going
even
toward
you
it, you lose your mind. And if you reach that line, then you still, it's not that you get somewhere, you're struck with still more longing, the same longing that got you to that line.
Yeah.
That, for me, is incredibly sad.
Really? Because for me,
I'll
it's
bounce
also,
back, but...
it's a little bit of a coquettish poem. It's also kind of like, it's sort of about eros and kind of revealing, concealing. I'm going to show you this line and I'm going to conceal it. But there is also almost, I don't read that my heart is silent under your hand. It's like, do not ask me, don't ask to possess me. You cannot possess me because there is this line and it's inviolable and I assert it. And I affirm this line in the poem. And we push it, we write about it, we approach it, we struck with longing. Insanity is an attempt to transgress all limits, blur the distinctions, but I protect this line. It's mine, it's my individuality, it's my poem, it's this inviolable line. So I feel that it's, okay, we lie together, we have a good time, but don't expect my heart would be beating in response to your hand all the time, like yours was not beating.
I know, there's something wrong with it.
On the other.
Any comments or questions about this, by the way, in the audience?
We have more poems.
But
interesting that you perceive.
Gina,
we want it
come
back,
on,
back.
Professors.
By popular
this.
Demand. But it's so funny, why do you, because in Russian, longing is good for you. So you're struck with longing, you go a little bit insane. This is fine. This is life. It's not tragic, it's life. So
it's
you
life,
know, you
but it would
push.
Be tragic. Insanity and longing to the point of insanity, I totally get that that's part of life.
It's got
in America,
life.
Like elsewhere. But that is a bit tragic?
No, it's like let's live with
okay, well,
it. Let's
okay,
live
well then,
with that
then
knowledge of inviolable line. Where would it get us?
Then how about the other thing? So that if at the end, it's not. Then I like your reading better, which is that the person isn't, she hasn't, the poet hasn't killed herself. She's just
not
saying, there's no address, you're not addressing the person listening until the very end. Don't look at that. But she says that now understand then when that my heart doesn't beat to your tune, doesn't beat at your command, metaphorically, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But everything that's preceded by that is not addressing the person who's listening.
No.
It's telling them about what would seem to be a big deal, but telling them it's not a big deal. You just don't get that you don't get to get that close, that it's good and right and just that there be an inviolable line, such is the nature of human individuality and happiness. And longing and insanity.
Yeah. Or the idea, yeah, that it's, yeah, no, now you,
you said what I kind of wanted to phrase. It's in a way, it's like, let's live with recognition of this line and what will happen. And we know that this line, it's not because we don't love enough, it's not that because we're not friends enough, it's because this line is that of our individuality. So I said that it's also an erotic poem, that she's also playing with her addressee through this revealing and concealing, getting closer and getting more distance and kind of playing on that line, but never crossing or allowing him or her or whoever is the addressee to cross the line. It's all on that line. You know,
spurring them on.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting.
Totally.
But of course, yeah, well, now we've got a long poem. I wonder who chose it.
Yeah. Sina, probably. Yeah. Knowing him. Blah, blah, blah.
Well, see, it's all new thinking is about loss.
Yeah, that's
I already disagree.
Super depressing. Do you want to read it? You want me to read it? You want to alternate?
No, you have better English. You go ahead.
Uh-oh. My English isn't that good. All the new thinking is about loss and blackberries. All the new thinking is about loss. And this resembles all the old thinking.
Read with a thoughtful expression.
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to be thoughtful.
Was that right? Okay, kid, don't follow them.
I will. All the new thinking is about loss. And this resembles all the old thinking. The idea, for example, that each particular erases the luminous clarity of a general idea, that the clown-faced woodpecker probing the dead, sculpted trunk of that black birch is, by his presence, some tragic falling off from a first world of undivided light. Or the notion that, because there is in this world no one thing to which the bramble of blackberry corresponds, a word is elegy to what it signifies. We talked about it late last night, and in the voice of my friend there was a thin wire of grief, a tone almost querulous. After a while I understood that, talking this way, everything dissolves. Justice, pine, hair, woman, you, and I. There was a woman I made love to, and I remembered how, holding her small shoulders in my hands sometimes, I felt a violent wonder at her presence, like a thirst for salt. From my childhood river with its island willows, silly music from the pleasure boat, muddy places where we caught the little orange silver fish called pumpkin seed. It hardly had to do with her. Longing, we say, because desire is full of endless distances. I must have been the same to her. But I remember so much, the way her hands dismantled bread, the thing her father said that hurt her, what she dreamed. There are moments when the body is as numinous as words, days that are the good flesh continuing. Such tenderness, those afternoons and evenings, saying, blackberry, blackberry, blackberry.
So does this poem say the opposite from the other one?
From itself.
Yeah.
Sorry?
From itself, she said.
Well, now that the word blackberry changed its meaning, I mean, it's hard to think about actual blackberry. We are almost unable to think about blackberry as such.
Right, this blackberry becomes warning. Code for the thing, the beautiful thing itself. When you
but
really
it's
somehow.
It's warning for the particular. You know, the poem wants to have the particular, and then it writes a poem about it and generalizes the particular, and then mourns this act of generalizing the particular and goes in circles like that a little bit. Because it starts with all new thinking is about loss. I so disagree with that.
This is a kind of old poem.
It is?
I mean, not that old. It's from like the 70s, 79, I think.
Oh, okay.
So it could have changed. In this, it would resemble all the old thinking.
But that whole idea that in each particular erases the luminous clarity of a general idea, it's like your insecticide smell. It's the particular.
Nothing erases that.
I know, but it's the.
That's blackberry.
Okay. Your
deep
insecticide is the blackberry.
Blackberry.
Yes.
1-to-1.
Exactly. But that in friendship, you need that particular that's almost like beyond words that only two of you share as a part of conspiracy or complicity, and then you write a public poem about, it's almost a poem about the loss of that kind of particular complicity that he had. But it's interesting, there is a man friend and there is a lover, and man friend kind of talks in abstractions about grief, justice, and so on. And the female lover, it's all about pumpkin seeds and blackberries. It's kind of problematic.
We don't know that that's a man, do we? Sure, it feels kind of, the friend. The friend feels kind of manly.
Because in Russian, I hear friend as masculine.
Okay. But, I mean, I get you, but.
I wonder, because it feels as though there's longing, you know, there's longing or loss, or the inarticulateness of that, of making love, that old relationship where they couldn't talk about all the things that he felt and she felt. And the poem certainly describes itself as being unable in some sense. And then there is the friendship with which not a lot of time is spent or not a lot of words are spent. But is that the one space in the poem where you can talk? Maybe friendship doesn't have longing and it doesn't have desire. I don't speak of desiring my friends, or not with any ease anyway. So maybe the poem briefly adverts to a special condition that's not plagued by the double predicament of poetry and love, something like that.
It's interesting. In fact, the poem really contradicts itself, because it sort of seemed to be about love and the loss of that particular way of loving, but the only way to talk about it is with a friend or with the addressee of the poem, to whom you could share blackberry, blackberry, blackberry. With your lover, you do not need to whisper blackberry. So it's interesting that, but there is still the idea that authenticity is in that unspeakable act, you know, and the blackberry and all that is less relevant. But it's kind of a beautiful poem because it's so contradictory.
I think it's beautiful. I don't think it's beautiful because it's contradictory. I mean, I think that it is contradictory and it is beautiful, but I don't see them as related intimately. I think that in a certain sense, then you can imagine that conversation, the last half of the poem being a correction to the way the conversation, the lines had been going along, that I'd just been sort of not using the right words and not using them with all my heart and as a friend, to a friend, really. And that's why we were getting querulous with one another. That's why we were getting snippy and snarky and saying, well, you know, so this is brambles and there's this girl and she had these shoulder blades, so what? So a lot of girls, there's a lot of shoulder blades. That then the conversation would take a new turn, and to say that what I really mean is that that's the most beautiful thing that ever happened to me. Can you understand that? Can I find words to make you? And that is hopeful, that he would find a way other than simply, for him in his private language, all he needs to say is blackberry, 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 but that doesn't work for the rest of the world, and that's super sad. But that's also what friends are for. Because they're a way for us to find a halfway between the extreme articulateness required to make our thoughts clear to strangers and the way that we can make people who know us compensate for our lack of articulateness and our language's lack of precision.
Yes, to get the radical version of this, if it was a true love poem, it should be just blackberry, blackberry, blackberry. That would be a true love poem. But then would we be discussing it? Probably not.
No, you'd get up and then, kiss her and walk out.
Yeah, to the top of the mountain again.
She might be that girl, actually.
Okay, I think there was something there. But it's interesting that also that how words lose their meaning, that now BlackBerry is a stupid digital device. That
yeah, that's a real blow to the poem, actually.
Yeah, it really... No.
I think actually I'm kind of getting this is trying to wear us down.
Yeah. He keeps returning us to the mountain.
The second time I thought it was just kind of like a glitch, or like, come on, you guys.
No,
you know.
But because it's a scene of authenticity. That song is like the scene of ultimate authenticity.
Right. Let's turn the tables on him. Like, make it really like.
Yeah, but maybe
take
friendship
energy from
is
it.
Not about authenticity. Friendship is kind of beyond. It's almost broader than authenticity. Glitches.
Yeah.
What is it? Your BlackBerry is off, Tina.
Whatever your name is.
It's again that beautiful nondescript open mouth sort of thing. That's another view. We're getting more and more abstract. As
yeah. But those are the knife checks.
Really
the Czech knife checks. Yeah.
I love that light on there. Okay.
Yeah, it does look like it looks like a shell.
It's a beautiful shadow.
Yeah, nice work over there. Snack bar.
I thought this was like a landscape that both of us share.
I mean, we all share this, really.
I mean, it's Cleveland, and you are from Michigan, and I am from St. Petersburg, but it's in between. Please forgive my knowledge of geography.
No, it is between. It's a lot closer to me, actually.
Thank you.
Look at all this snow. It's beautiful.
It's not always frozen.
So,
it was really nice of you guys to come all the way here to see me, you know?
It was nice of you to be here.
Eddie. No, we just, you know, we thought we'd come out and see how you were doing.
It's kind of a drag here, really.
We might share that, or...
You know, it's friendship in real time. Was like it's not cut too quickly. Friendship takes this time that the wind blows in your hair, you just stand, the whiteness is in the background. It takes this time. But also, it's interesting, they're almost not touching. Look at the distances between them. It's kind of very tactful. It's sort of about touching without touching too much. And then there's this beautiful line, thank you for coming, thank you for being here. You know, it's kind of almost absurd, but friendship is kind of about that. Thank you for being here. But I like the fact that their bodies are like hieroglyphs and they almost touch, but never really touch. And that's precisely that line in between, that white line between the bodies that we back to it. She also has a wonderful Hungarian accent.
Which never
that's a
hurts.
Personal reference. I'm sorry. To yes. Okay, that's a complicated question. No, the short answer is no. It was like an alternative culture, sort of bard culture when people were circulating tapes. He was also an actor in Taganka Theater. He was not active political dissident. He kind of occupied this gray line between official and unofficial and anti-official culture, so he was not, so it's right in between. As I said, the film is not about reaching the top of the scientific communism, it's just about reaching a top in friendship. It's sort of about authenticity. So it's kind of in between. He's testing the limit of what was allowed. Then he died tragically, became sort of a national hero.
But, yeah. How did he
die? Что?
How did he die?
You know, I don't exactly remember. I think it's maybe it was even a drug overdose and heart attack. It was in 1980.
Their only friend who they felt was completely beyond reproach. And I remember for years being threatened by that, realizing that therefore I wasn't beyond reproach. And then over time, I gained a level of comfortability with this, and actually I found it very liberating to realize that unlike a situation with a lover where it always sucks when there's a problem and you always sort of feel like you ought to have to fix the problem, that sometimes with a
friend I found it liberating. I don't find this thing liberating. It's not on. It's the right to fuck each other up as necessary, and that takes away a lot of the responsibility. And I think that over time it's become a sort of a tremendous source of maturity to recognize that the this person is always going to have disappointment in you and frustration and the rest of it, and you're not going to get over it, and actually that's just great. It just makes life a heck of a lot easier, and so then you don't get into the bromance thing where you have to sum it, like you say, and there's no true romance where you're always trying to perfect things. You get into this sort of fellow traveler thing, And your instinct is to make that just sort of weak, like, oh, yeah, you know, we're just sort of ships passing a night and we have fun on Thursday nights. But that actually somehow that there's a tremendous depth to that as well.
Yes, but that's like a kind of not a negative definition, but like it's good to not be beyond reproach. But I'm also interested in what are the positive things of occasionally reproaching. And I don't know, I want kind of a positive redefinition of what this man just said. But I understand that being beyond reproach is too high an expectation. And in a way, we're only human, and we have to kind of reproach each other from time to time.
I mean, this probably, I think, for a lot of people, at least for... You're losing what?
I'm losing my concentration, girl.
That there's a period when you meet people that you really dig, that you think that they are kind of beyond reproach. They're just so awesome and different that whatever they might do that you wouldn't like, you just assume that it was something that you just had to adapt to. And so I would think that I've definitely personally felt that and grown beyond it in two ways. One way being that this person is, in both cases, the person wasn't beyond reproach, but it was that the relationship was just sort of faulty in some fundamental way, and so that my misconception of it was a way of dealing with that faultiness or caused that faultiness. The other way is that you think someone is awesome, and then you realize, well, actually, they're fallible, and I like them better that way. I like them more that way. I can then live with this person as my friend, and not just have a model. In fact, that makes me think of people that I was close to, and I wanted to be like. I mean, initially like my dad, but then like other people I was sort of role models, and then they were they could do no wrong because they set the standard for right. And then in the few cases in my life where then I demoted them to the human level and was able to interact with them, then that was the most wonderful thing in the world. But hard, because when I was young, they were the way of sort of seeing my way through everything that was hard. They were summiting whenever there was a problem. Fjords, ice storms, avalanches, whatever, no problem.
Maybe failability is actually kind of important, recognition of failability, or like recognition of mortality, you know, recognition of tragic flaws. That's kind of interesting part of recognition that comes almost like with age sometimes, or is having many friends, and it kind of teaches you something else about life, that you live with this and what does it mean. It's something, living with failures and tragic flaws. Can we live with it? This is kind of an alternative model than we either leap the mountains or, you know, fall into the abyss. This is something else. We live with our failabilities. You know, but I saw, like, you know, while we were talking, I saw a strange animal on the screen. That was not the two women. It was a strange animal, which I think was the back of the turtle.
Really?
But I think there is a technical difficulty again when it comes to the trans-species relationship. The cabinet seemed to be censoring something.
They have issues.
They have real issues. But should we talk about turtles even if we don't see turtles?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Emerson said that the thought of the turtle is a turtle.
He'd be capable of that.
You are an English professor. You should know.
I remember him saying, all thoughts of the turtle are turtle.
All thoughts of the turtle are turtle.
Right. Not that that makes more sense. I'm just saying that that's what I remember. Which I remember thinking after thinking it made no sense, was that turtles think in turtle, and so that you shouldn't think that you're, even if a turtle shows some faint sign of human-like recognition or whatever, don't forget, it's just thinking turtle.
That's interesting. Again, you have completely opposite interpretation from mine.
What's yours?
Well, I thought that it makes, first of all, no sense. Like, I thought if we paraphrase and say all sort of friendship is friendship, that makes sense because you're thinking of friendship, you're feeling friendship. But turtle is an animal that has its own existence. Your thinking of turtle keeps turtle is completely indifferent to your thinking about turtle. And the thought of turtle does not become, in fact, the thought of a turtle, I can't even say it in English, the thought of a turtle is nothing but a thought of a turtle.
Right, that's definitely true. When we're doing it,
is not a turtle.
When we're thinking about turtles, that's just we're thinking. That's not
exactly.
A turtle. I'm thinking about a turtle right now.
Me too.
No turtle.
Me too, but
there are turtles out there, though.
But I
and they might not be thinking, but they might be thinking it just simply in turtle.
But you know, now that you said this word so many times,
it's freaky, right?
A very kind of warm and fuzzy memory comes to my mind of a real turtle, which was my first true friend. I never had pets. Because I lived in a communal apartment, so turtle was my one and only pet. And
what then, was its name?
I don't remember.
How old are you?
I was about 6.
How's it doing? They live forever,
well,
right?
The turtle, well, it was interesting to touch it because like the time was sort of inscribed on its shell, so I thought it was kind of amazing. But then the turtle escaped to
this is totally like last call back here. It's like, yeah. Turn
but
on the light.
You know what happened?
Его, пусть он в связке в одной с тобой, там поймешь, кто такой. Если парень
for you guys too, right?
Like by now you just hope they finally reach the top and shut up already. Whether this was it an insulting comment to us that we should shut up too?
I have no idea. He turned on us.
The gray cardinal wants us to kind of sadly fade into the whiteness or darkness.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, Sina, dissolve us into darkness.
Yeah, but subtly.
Fade out, subtle fade out.
Don't you want to finish your turtle story?
Okay, the last. This is as we are. No, wait, my turtle story. So the thing about the turtle that was my only true friend. We lived on the Gulf of Finland, which was about 20 miles from the border, and the turtle was last seen walking to the west. The turtle immigrated. This was a fatal blow. Since then, I felt like I had to follow the turtle.
Defected,
and that's why
right?
I'm
you say immigrated, but defected, right?
Defected to the west. At least, I mean, I hope it had a good life, had a good one.
Yeah.
The turtle really had a good one.
A good one, turtle, whatever.
So it really was, it's a really true story. And now I'm... Yeah.